I wouldn't even know how to do that. What do you do? Just like walk up to random people and go, hey, blah, 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 sports.
Sports Empire, the podcast, part of the DynastySportsEmpire.com podcast network. Dare I say, the flagship podcast of the Dynasty Sports Empire podcast network. We bring you the latest in sports and fantasy sports with, shall we say, a lighter approach to what most people consider a very serious undertaking. On the show today, episode 84, recording on November 15th, 2022. NFL Week 10 recap with all the twists and turns of what happened this week and the fallout from all of that. And we have our global soccer correspondent, Ben from Indiana, to stop by to talk about the World Cup, which starts on Sunday. For more, you can follow us at DSE Podcast on Twitter. So let's get right into it. As always, I'm your host, Jeff Roman. And alongside me tonight and every night is a guy who could also have beat Josh McDaniels this week, Tim Reinhart. Welcome, Tim.
I think our 2005 MIT flag football team could beat the Raiders right now.
I mean, to me, that is the most embarrassing loss of the season. You know, obviously, Jeff Saturday was able to convince Jim Irsay to go back to Matt Ryan somehow. But that, the fact that they couldn't even, I mean, it wasn't even really that close.
That whole Colts thing, I mean, is really interesting. Has anything come out about that? Like, what was going on behind the scenes between ownership and Frank Reich?
No, but I mean, I guess
it can't have been good.
I think it sure seemed like that ownership told Frank Reich to bench Matt Ryan.
That's
and
right.
So they benched Matt Ryan for Ellinger, right? It was a pretty much obvious that it was from the top. And then,
or we all thought, right? Like, I don't have any other reason to think that, but like maybe it was, I don't know. Like, it's just weird.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you know, on Sunday, they're like, hey, Matt Ryan's starting.
Right.
You know,
I wasn't watching the game. You texted me. You're like, Matt Ryan's. And I was like, what? This doesn't make any sense.
My guess is Jeff Saturday, being a friend of the owner, was like two things. One of two things. One, he was like, I'll take the job, the interim job, but we got to start Matt Ryan. He's the best quarterback. Or two, he got there and was like, we can't do this without Matt Ryan, right? Like, basically, they didn't have an offensive coordinator. Nobody was there to call plays. Basically, they were leaning on Matt Ryan to be the offensive coordinator, and they couldn't play without him, I guess.
So, it makes those comments by Irsay after they hired Saturday. He was like, yeah, we just won a couple games. We're back in this, which, you know, may or may not be true, but like, it certainly seems like they went out and played to win, you know? So I wonder if there was like a tanking disagreement between ownership and Frank Reich. Maybe Frank Reich I mean, I'm just kind of spitballing. I have no idea. Like, none of it makes sense. Maybe Frank Reich wanted to tank for a better draft pick to get one of these quarterbacks so he could work with them, mold them, whatever. I don't know. It's just it's a truly bizarre scenario.
Yeah. It's flat. There's so much there that we don't know, but I think just from kind of like the tea leaves, it sure seems like, you know, Saturday was able to convince Irsay that they should play Matt Ryan. You know, and I think there's also financial implications there, because if Matt Ryan gets hurt, I think if he fails his physical, he gets some guaranteed money next year or something like that.
Right. So it's a significant amount. I think it's like $12 million.
Right. There's more to it than just, you know, on the field this year. So I guess they're just going to keep going with him. And, you know, they have they just beat the Raiders. So you know, that's an easy part of their schedule. I'm not familiar with the rest of their schedule, but I mean, 4-5-1, they're not out of it. They're really not.
If they were in the other league, they'd be right in the thick of it.
Right. That's true. They would.
they would. That one tie, you know, from the beginning of the season, really just stuck in their craw all, and still to this day.
Yeah.
All right, but I think, you know, we're bearing the lead a little bit in that the game of the year happened this week, in which, you know, everybody knows about by now, but the Vikings beat the Bills 33-30 after, you know, the Bills had a fairly commanding lead.
In one of the most bizarre, turns of events in a football game can take.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we talked about it a couple of weeks ago with the Jets' comeback over the Browns, is that they strung together a bunch of 10% outcomes, right?
Yeah.
Like 10% chance that they got this drive, and then 10% that they got this, and then that long pass was a 10. You know, like, they strung this felt like a bunch of 2% things, right? Like, I think their win probability was down to 2% when they failed on the fourth down conversion at the goal line. Like, there's a 2% chance that the Bills are going to fumble the snap, and the Bills fumbled the snap. Oh, and there's a 2% chance that Justin Jefferson is going to come down with it instead of the defender,
right,
who had out jumped him. And there's a 2% chance that Josh Allen is going to throw two red zone interceptions in the fourth quarter and overtime. You know, they strung together so many of those things, but it still happened. You know, that's why the percentages are not zero.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's one of those one of those games you just, like, every 2% thing that you're talking about, we were both, like, at the moment where we needed to leave our homes and to, like, go do something. We're like, yes, but I want to keep watching this game. Like, what's gonna happen? It just, then everything that happened became another, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that happened.
And
like two, perhaps the two best catches all year happened in this game. Both these one-handed, like, circus grabs at critical points in the game. Even like the, you know, the QB sneak fumble coming after a, like, an inability to convert on fourth down, like, that game is over. Like, and right, every 9,999 times out of 10,000, it's done, except for that one. And I guess that's why we keep coming back.
Yeah. And I forgot to mention the part where after the fumble recovery touchdown for Minnesota put them up three, Josh Allen drove down with like 30 seconds left and kicked a field goal.
Right. To send it to overtime.
So, you know, that part was remarkable in and of itself. I think the fallout really from this one and a couple other things is that, you know, I think Josh Allen's MVP case is probably gone. Maybe he shouldn't have played. That was another weird one.
Right.
Right. That was another weird part of it where he was like, you know, it was kind of, is he, will he, won't he? And then he didn't really even come out of the tunnel until 45 minutes before the game.
Right.
And they were like, oh, he's active. And nobody knew if that meant he was active but not playing. And
which would have been a weird decision too. Like, the whole thing was, I don't know, maybe it was gamesmanship. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, it could have been gamesmanship. Could it have been like him talking himself into the game, you know, like from, I don't know. I'm not sure. Again, another thing that, like, did the team try to sit him out and he wanted to play?
And he said no,
or did they want him to play and they were hiding him the whole week? I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me, but they dropped down with that loss. They're down into the sixth spot in the East, right? From basically from number one to number six.
That's what we've been saying.
How jammed up everything is.
In that AFC, you lose one, you could be out. You win one, you could be the number one seed.
Yep, absolutely. So I guess your thoughts on anything. Do we learn anything, I guess, about the Bills or Vikings from that one?
Well, something in a second. Something I did learn, and I was wondering, I have not yet fact checked. I was going to ask you if you knew the answer. Is it true that if you possess the ball for all 10 minutes of overtime without scoring, you win?
No,
I read that on Twitter, by a verified, well, who knows what verified means anymore, but like by a verified like football person, that if you possess the ball for all 10 minutes of overtime and do not score, you win. And I like saw it in between classes or something, and I was like, I should check that later. Yeah. And then I never checked it.
I believe, yeah, I think if the score is tied, I mean, I think if it's tied at the end of the period, it's a tie.
Okay. All right. So that is, we'll call that an unconfirmed, tweet. So what do we learn about the Bills? I still think that they're in the top tier of the NFL. So I'm not, I don't think that that loss said anything except for just, I mean, like you said, they went from 1-6, and that's the reality of the AFC. I think it says a whole lot more about the Vikings, who people were kind of questioning, is this like a legit one loss team? They go into Buffalo and yes, it took a series of miraculous turns, but you know, you could say the same thing after Josh Allen scores or drives him down and gets the 3 points to turn it into overtime. Like, you know, you could envision a scenario where the Vikings are so dejected they just go out and lose the game. Instead, they went out and scored. So I think we learned a lot. Whatever we learned a lot more about the legitimacy of that Vikings team, and maybe even learned, you know, is it fair to say Justin Jefferson is a top three wide receiver in the NFL?
Yeah, that's definitely fair.
Yeah, so I think I think that's the that's the takeaways are more on the other on the Vikings side.
Yeah, I think so, and even before, you know, most of those crazy things happened, they did have the ball at the goal line, you know, to win the game. So four plays there, and you know, they had the ball at the goal line in overtime as well. Couldn't get it in and kick the chip shot field goal. So they were moving the ball on the Bills. Good defense for the Bills. So that part was certainly impressive. The Vikings find themselves 8-1 with the Eagles losing and with the Cowboys losing. They are, you know, head to head with the Eagles for that number one spot and the bye. So that would be huge for them as well. Getting games at home in their dome and getting that week off would be, you know, a massive advantage for them.
Right. And you just mentioned, I guess, the other big sort of turn of events this week was the Eagles losing to the football team and or whatever they're called now. And, yeah. You know, I didn't see really any of it, but it did seem like there was some questionable officiating. So I don't know if you, what your take
I watched that. I mean, I think there was two significant missed calls, one a 15-yard penalty on the sideline that wasn't one against the Eagles, and missed face mask that caused a fumble. That was missed, and actually, Dallas Goedert got hurt on it as well. So insult to injury there as well for the Eagles. I mean, it was just one of those things where the Commanders put together a bunch of really long, great drives and kept converting on third down. They were like something like 12 of 15 on third down or something.
That's pretty awesome.
You know, I think the one thing that the Eagles are weakest at, I would say, they're one of the best teams in the league, but their run defense is weak, and you saw that against Houston as well, who ran all over them.
Kept that a football game. Yeah,
I think it puts them in a position where if they are not ahead and the other team can run the ball, you know, it makes them vulnerable, and I don't think that's exclusive to just them. Mm-hmm. Lots of teams have that kind of weakness. So their offense showed that they could, you know, come back in comeback mode, but they had that one devastating turnover for Goddard, and one, you know, there's a bomb to Quez Watkins 50 yards down the field. He catches it, then doesn't get touched, gets up, and then fumbles it at like the 10-yard line.
Yeah.
So there was a couple of those kind of like big flip plays that happened. You know, sometimes the bounces just don't go your way, and that's why it's hard to go 16 right, and 0, yeah, 17 and 0, whatever.
Like, why it's
that's
only why happened it doesn't a couple happen. Times. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not reading too much into that, okay. But I think we understood that if a team could run the football on the Eagles, control the ball, and had enough defense to slow their offense down, they could be beaten. I don't think that's not revolutionary. And that's exactly what Washington did. Second meeting of the year. So that helps as well.
Right. Yep. Good point.
And also the Cowboys lost, right? So
Cowboys lost. Yep.
Cowboys lost to Green Bay, a team who looked pretty much, I don't know, lost.
Yeah.
Before that.
At best, they looked lost. Yeah.
Yeah. The Cowboys, I heard a stat this week. They were something like 190-0 when they were leading by 14 points in the fourth quarter. And now they are 190-1
yeah.
after that. So that was, you know, another bad loss and a bad loss for our picks because we both had them in that
yeah.
game.
Aaron Rodgers, you know, if he ends up coining another one of these, like, these lines, like, relax with, well, we're not dead yet.
Right. You
know, I feel like it would be so apt for Aaron Rodgers to just, or, you know, and Tom Brady, same thing. Like, these older quarterbacks that we sort of thought maybe we were writing off, maybe they got a little lead left in the pencil.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely possible. Well, we'll see what they've got. Yeah. I definitely wouldn't,
still a lot left.
Yeah. And they are at Packers at 4-6 on the outside, looking in, would have to get past the 49ers that are currently 5-4. So
right.
That would be still a ways to go, but you know, they're on the outside looking in
yes.
there. All right. Let's see. I think we talked about the Eagles, the Bills, the Vikings fallout. We talked about the Eagles and the other teams. Because we got the World Cup stuff coming up, why don't we look ahead to next week, do our picks here,
sure.
Because I don't want to look back to how bad my picks were last week.
Okay.
3. And then we can have Ben join us here shortly.
Yeah, we'll talk sounds about good. That.
All right, so for next week, what do you got?
Oh, man. It is I feel like the games, like, just as in a, what do you call it, cursory look, are challenging.
Yes, it's a tough week. It's a tough week, I found, as well.
So, you know, I immediately would have, like, jumped on the Bears here, but, you know, they're – collapse. They were up 14 points, ended up losing the Lions.
Yeah. Another one of ours that turned very quickly.
That doesn't, you know, make you feel any more comfortable. And, you know, you can't go Colts hunting really anymore, even though they are playing the Eagles. But I will go Raiders hunting. I know that it's a rivalry game and that the Broncos are equally terrible. But I do think that the Raiders are in a free fall. So my first pick will be the Broncos minus, I see it at -2.5 on at home against the Raiders.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, you're getting under a field goal there.
Yeah.
The Raiders. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. The Raiders have kind of, as we talked about, I think that they're kind of, sailing off into the distance. And I actually thought that they didn't have their draft pick this year because of Davante Adams. And I went to look it up to see, you know, if Green Bay had it, but it was actually Davante Adams was traded before the draft. So they traded.
So they already received
the draft picks. Yeah. That already went out.
Okay.
So they could have a very good draft pick there and have decisions to make at the quarterback.
Right.
Position.
Or if Tom Brady shakes free, that's the other rumor.
No.
People are saying
okay.
So.
Tom Brady always in center. He just always in the center of rumors.
Yeah,
never stops with this guy. A couple of the ones that you ruled out I ruled in.
Okay. Give me one.
And one of them is Philadelphia -6.5. So being all that, like, Indianapolis played well last week. Philly played probably their worst game of the year.
Sure.
But if Philly is not 7 points better than Indianapolis, I don't know. I don't know what about the NFL I know. You know, I think there's just enough of a gulf there that Philly should beat them by 7 points. Will they? I don't know.
Yeah.
But I feel like between the teams, they are at least 7 points better.
Okay.
But Matt Ryan, Jonathan Taylor are both back.
Rediscovered Paris Campbell. They're like, oh, we have this real fast guy on our team. Maybe we'll
throw it
home. Jeez.
Yes. So I don't know if Indianapolis can be that team that can run the ball and, you know, control Philly like Washington did. So I'm going to take the under a touchdown here. I think they're better.
All right. I will go to the Bengals. I believe they're coming off of a bye, if I'm not mistaken. And they are on the road against the Steelers, and I'm seeing this game at 4 and Cincinnati -4.5, and I will take Cincinnati to beat the Steelers by 4.5. I've liked the Bengals, sort of been on them. I feel like they've underachieved all year. Steelers still, I believe they're getting TJ Watt back. Is that right?
He was back this week, actually.
Okay, so
yeah,
that makes them a more a harder team, but I still think they're a touchdown better than the Steelers there.
Yeah, I think the Steelers record with TJ Watt is like astronomical compared to their record without him over his career. He makes a big difference to that defense. But I think you're right. The rest advantage alone in this one gives Cincy more than 4.5. Yeah, 4.5 is a good number. I am going to go to the other one that you ruled out, which is Chicago.
Do it.
Chicago against Atlanta. Chicago is getting 3 points. So if I'm getting the full three, I'm going to take Chicago plus the three. Neither team can really stop anybody on defense. It'll probably be a last team with the ball kind of game.
Sure.
And one, I'll take Fields over Mariota. So
yeah,
I'm just gonna, you know, 3 points plus Fields. I'll take that.
It should. I guess the Falcons haven't really played great offense of late. They were scoring 20 something points a game before, and staying in games and that sort of hasn't been the thing. So that makes sense.
And they run the ball a lot, whether they're behind or ahead. So if they're ahead, I don't think they're going to push out so far ahead. Leave it open to Chicago score something in the back door, or, you know, tie the game late with a wild throw and run from Chicago.
Yeah.
So I think this one will stay close enough that I'll take the side with the points.
And then the the move that I'll make is I'll go back to the well. Again, understanding it's a bit of a rivalry game. Sunday night, Chiefs on the road against the Chargers. I have this at under a touchdown, Chiefs -6.5. And it seems like that's a good number to get it at. The Chargers are a bit in disarray, lost that game at the 49ers on Sunday night. Starting to wonder if the hype is going to match, or the hype about Herbert is going to be matched by, or if he's going to match that hype with his play. So I'm starting to question it, and I'll ride what probably is the best team in the NFL, and the Chiefs there.
Yeah, I like that one too. Didn't pick it, but I like it because you know, I think Herbert is still hurt. You know, he hurt that rib.
Yeah, he has cartilage. In his defense, he has been playing hurt. You're right.
Yeah. So, he hasn't been the same. And, you know, I don't know if it's just something with the Chargers or whatever. Every time they're just something just doesn't quite click, you know, like if it's just a franchise or whatever, I don't know. It doesn't quite work. Yeah. I'm going to go with Tennessee.
Ooh,
+3 against Green Bay.
All right. So you're taking, I thought about taking the Packers here and maybe they get on a roll, but you're going the other way.
I'm going on the other way. I think Tennessee is a better coach team. They have, their offense is not great, but Green Bay's offense is not great either. Tennessee's defense is a little bit better. Again, I'm getting full 3 points. I'll take Vrabel to get it, keep it close here.
Okay. I could see that happening. He has a knack for doing that, so I certainly could see that happening for sure.
All right, so that's all three of them. Anything else you want to talk about? Any games you want to look ahead?
Not. Well, we got the Jets. Patriots, it's a big game for both teams in the AFC East. Sure. Winner puts them, if the Jets win, they're in first place. If the Patriots win, they're going to have an impact. The same thing that happened to the Bills is going to happen to the Jets, where they drop down to 6 or even out of the playoff picture. So I think that's an interesting game. What do the Giants keep rolling against the Lions? They at sitting at 7-2, they're in an interesting position because they still have the game or games with Philly, right? I think they have both games left still.
They haven't played them yet.
So they're another team that kind of has their own destiny in their own hands, and these are the kind of games that they have to take control over. And I guess like kind of quietly, the Ravens got to 6-3. And are right in the thick of things. So they got the Panthers at home, fully expect them to take care of business. So I think those were just and then I guess the big game that neither of us picked is Vikings at home against the Cowboys, where the Cowboys are actually 1-point favorites, it looks like. So yeah,
I don't know what to make of that one. Either team could win in either way. So I tried to stay away from that one. And the line reflects it. It's a pick or a -1 there. Nobody really knows who's going to win.
Right.
So that one should be a fun watch for me. Not something that I'm going to pick because I don't know which way it's going to go.
Exactly.
That makes it enjoyable to watch for sure.
And then I guess the last thing is, Did you address the TJ Jinx? I don't remember who it was, but he hopped on the pod on Friday and he gave us a must start. And then that player, I believe, was inactive. I forget who it was.
It was Mecole Hardman.
Yes. Mecole Hardman was out. Inactive.
Yeah.
So do we have like a Madden cover jinx developing here?
Yeah, he got Fields right.
He did.
So that one was good. The Mecole Hardman was a little bit of a surprise for me too, because I definitely have him on one of my fantasy teams, and I ended up still starting him because I didn't realize that he was going to be out, and it was kind of like a little bit of a late scratch. So that one was snuck up on me as well.
Yeah.
I didn't rub it in a little bit. That about that. So we'll see. I know he, I think if you look at what happened in the game, Kadarius Toney was kind of the Mecole Hardman replacement.
Yes.
had a pretty good game. Maybe giving him the benefit of the doubt, the handicap was right, but the player was hurt.
The underlying analysis was on point. So
yeah,
we'll go with that. No jinx.
No jinx. Okay. Process over results.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Anything that caught your eye for this upcoming week?
No, I don't. I don't think so. I think that just about covers it. All right. So we've got a November World Cup on the docket this year, and of course we had to bring back our senior global soccer correspondent Ben from Indiana is here to talk about the World Cup and help us get up to speed. Because I feel like I'm way thrown off by it being in November. I have no idea what's going on. And he's going to help us get set up. Welcome, Ben.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here and extremely excited for the World Cup, even though it is in winter, as you have said.
All right. And I think that's an interesting place to start. And maybe I didn't prep you for this, but I think maybe we're not talking about this enough, that the fact that in the World Cup bidding process, Qatar basically dropped off bagfuls of cash on the people in charge of picking where the World Cup was going to go. They picked Qatar. A bunch of them got fired from their jobs for taking bribes, and we still kept the World Cup
arrested for it
and arrested. We still kept the World Cup in Qatar. And even though through the bidding process, they were like, oh, we can do it in the summer. We'll just air condition the stadium, a thing that nobody's ever done before. And then they were like, oh, you know what? Actually, it's going to have to be in November because it's 7 gazillion degrees in the summer. And everybody was just fine with it. Yeah. Everybody was just like, oh, okay. Like, I don't understand this part of it. It makes no sense to me that we're just like, okay, whatever. You know,
yeah.
Is that weird? Am I reading too much into that?
Yeah, it's a little bit like, you know, let's say there's a somebody comes and steals a car and goes on a joyride with it, and they get arrested, and but then the police are like, "Okay, we caught you. Anyway, enjoy the car."
Yeah, right.
Like.
Yeah, there's no punishment. It's almost like they arrested the car salesman, you know, like,
yeah,
the car salesman had the punishment and the thief did not.
It's definitely a bizarre situation, but I mean, I think we're all, you know, in many ways we're so, I think, just deadened to like corruption in large sporting events of this kind. You get it. I feel like you get it with the Olympics, with various, you know, World Cup, various continental confederation tournaments, things of that nature, that at this point, you know, people, I'm definitely, you know, looking past a lot of, pretty dark things in order to enjoy this World Cup, but it's here. What are you gonna do?
Yeah, let's enjoy it.
I guess we'll enjoy it. We'll kind of wince and watch it.
Can I jump in with a question about like the timing and location? Like, do you think that any? So obviously, it's a different time of year. Is any team or any country, any region going to be benefited? Like, who benefits from it being later in the year and not in the summer, if anybody?
I don't know if anyone benefits majorly. The thing is with the way that world soccer right now is that almost an overwhelming majority of players from no matter where, what country they're representing, all of the elite players in the world are playing in Europe, in European leagues with a sort of like August to May schedule. So, I mean, you have like the US, I guess, has a lot of MLS players that plays over the summer. And there's some other leagues like that as well. But again, I think even with the US, when you're looking at which players are going to be the game changers for you, they're all kind of in the same boat. They're all playing in this European league with a fall and spring season. So okay. I don't know, hard to say, but
yeah, that's a good question.
It's an interesting thought. I mean, you could say, you know, or is the U.S. going to be more tired in that, you know, a good portion of our roster has played a full season going into this and is now sort of like entering when they would normally be sort of trying to start recuperating. They're sort of, it's sort of how a World Cup normally is for the European teams. It's like at the end of a season after a bit of a break. So,
right. So it, all right, well, for them, yeah, it's almost like the World Baseball Classic coming in November, right, as opposed mm-hmm. to, you know, whatever it is coming at the end of the season. That's an interesting take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think Mexico is on that schedule as well. Is a Mexican domestic league on that schedule, Ben?
I actually think they are a fall and spring schedule as well, but, but yeah, they're another, nation where they have a lot of players in their own domestic league. So, I always think that's kind of fun to have, a large representation from, a pool that maybe most of the other teams aren't really drawing from. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it gets down to the team building part of it. Would you rather have like kind of a congealed unit that has plays well together and knows each other, or like the highest talent possible? Just hoping that the sum of the parts is greater than the whole, you know?
Yeah, you certainly hope that, especially with if you're wanting the U.S. to do well, I believe.
So let's talk about the U.S. then. Mm-hmm. Just at the top, our you know, U.S. men's national team. It's been 8 years since they are in the World Cup. They missed the last one. Mm-hmm. I measure, I guess, success in the tournament for the U.S. getting out of the group. Do you think U.S. is getting out of the group? Do you think they are going to do more than that? Obviously, their group is England, Wales, and Iran. Mm-hmm. So they'd have to win the group or be one of the top second place teams to get through.
I think they have a good chance. I think they're pretty clearly better than Wales and Iran. England is obviously kind of in a separate tier. Just so much depth and so much talent at basically every position. The U.S., it's very highly ranked right now, probably in FIFA rankings, more highly ranked than what they technically deserve, but, they have a ton of talent that, I mean, in my lifetime, you almost say this every World Cup, but this is the most talented group of players the U.S. has ever fielded at a men's World Cup. And it's just, I mean, these guys are playing for Champions League teams. They're, you know, you used to be your you'd look at Landon Donovan as your best player and you'd say, oh, he's, you know, he's on loan at Everton, where he sometimes plays, you know, and that's like your highlight. And now we've got, you know, players at some of the biggest clubs in the world. And I just think that's really exciting. And the U.S. also has, I think, the second youngest team squad at this World Cup. So, you know, the future is really bright. And even at this one, I would expect them, I think, you talked about what's a measure of success. Would getting out of the group be that? I kind of feel not getting out of the group would be a bit of a failure, in my opinion. But then going on to win any knockout stage games, I think would be an extreme success. So it's a real thin margins here, but I don't know.
Right. Yeah, we talk about like with other sports a lot, you know, just one play or one bounce of the ball really changes a whole game. And in this case, it can change a whole like whole tournament that only happens once every four years. So, mm-hmm. you know, one ball bouncing one way and going in the net or out of the net, mm-hmm. You know, it there's a lot riding on pretty much everything in here, and that's why it's fun to watch, you know.
So so who do you have coming out? Who do you think's going to be coming out of that group, that group B?
Well, I mean, I think you've got to say England, and I would say the U.S. Wales, like I said, they do have some talent, but some of them are kind of, you've got players like Gareth Bale, you've got a like a Aaron Ramsey coming off of injury who, in a lot of ways, it's sort of like a, you know, one last time getting the band back together. You know, they've had some success in the past, gone deep in some tournaments. Can they do it again? I don't know. I think it might just be a little too far out of reach for him, but you never know. So I'm going to say England to win, and I'll say the U.S. will come up second there.
Okay. It's kind of chalk. Looks like Wales is a little bit more favored, or they're about on the same tier as the United States, it looks like, but a little bit ahead as far as Vegas is concerned.
Yeah. So let's reverse quickly and go to Group A, and we'll go then we'll go alphabetical order through the rest, Group A through H here. So Group A is Netherlands is the big favorite at -200 or more, and then Senegal, Ecuador, and the host Qatar. So that's the first game on Sunday, Qatar, Ecuador, 11 a.m. Eastern. Netherlands obviously the big favorite here. Anybody, what do you think about the rest of the teams here, Ben?
So I you know, Senegal, I really like them at this number here because they're reigning Africa Cup of Nations champions, and they are really good. They have a lot of talent throughout the squad. They are a little bit of a setback. I think Sadio Mane, who is you know, currently at Bayern Munich, formerly at Liverpool, is, I think, injured and going to miss the first couple, possibly all of the group stage, but they still have a lot of talent there, and I could see them. Listen, World Cup groups are so, there's so much random things that could happen because you play each team one single time, and even when the best team is playing the worst team, you get draws, you get you know, strange decisions that happen. I could easily see somebody like Senegal coming out at the top of this group, but I do think we'll see Netherlands and Senegal coming out of Group A.
Senegal is the you know, has been my favorite of my team for a long time, and I have them getting at least to the quarters. So I think I got them to go through the group and then advance past the round of 16. So I like them to come out of that group as well.
All right.
So we went through B. So just England and USA for the record there. So Group C is Argentina is the big favorite, and then Poland and Mexico and Saudi Arabia is 25-1 to win the group. Obviously, Argentina, big favorite here, but has disappointed in previous World Cups. And anything, Poland, Mexico, anything interesting about those two?
You know, Argentina, obviously, they always have the talent. And it's just kind of, you know, do they have, are they too front-loaded? Or are they too loaded with attacking power and not enough stability in the midfield and defense to go deep? I think there's still some questions about that, but I think for this group, I think they shouldn't have too much trouble getting through there. I think Messi still actually has that capability to kind of like put the whole team on his back and carry it through a World Cup group. So I think we'll see that again. Poland and Mexico, I hate to completely write off Saudi Arabia, but I'm going to. Poland and Mexico, they feel kind of similar to me. They've got, you know, a few really good players, and then they've got a lot of players that have kind of been there been there a long time, kind of a team core that's going on. I do think Poland has the talent to get through that group as well.
Yeah, I think that one will be interesting because the first game is Mexico Poland on Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean that could decide it really right there. So
yeah, I always find that interesting when the game between the two kind of equal footing teams is first, similar to the USA against Wales on Monday, 2 p.m. Eastern, which could also basically decide the fate right off the bat. Put one team way ahead of the other. So Argentina and Poland in Group C. We're going to go to Group D. France, another big favorite, a lot of big favorites here in the first couple of groups, with Denmark, Tunisia, and Australia are the long shots in that group at 14-1 and 20-1.
Yeah, I mean, France, obviously they're the reigning champions. Their player pool is just so deep. I mean, you could make a team from the players that they're leaving at home, and you'd look at it and be like, oh, this could be a semifinal World Cup team. I mean, that's how completely stacked they are. And I think to look at them as anything but favorites to repeat, I mean, that would be the smart bet, I think. Denmark is really good. They have some good playmakers. They have, obviously, Christian Eriksen returning after in the Euros. He had an incident with, I believe, some kind of heart failure, like during a match. It was pretty scary to see, but he's
that bounced was wild.
Back.
Shocking to me that he's still playing after that.
And this is not even one. That was last summer, I think. And now he's getting ready to join his team at the World
Cup. Unbelievable.
And they also have another younger player, kind of in a similar mold, in that playmaking mold, Mikkel Damsgaard. I don't know. I'll probably butcher every name that I say here tonight.
no judgments.
Yeah. He showed a ton of promise back at the Euros last summer. I look for them to do well again. Tunisia, interestingly, I believe has the most players in their squad that were born in a different country. And the bulk of those were born in France. So we almost have two French teams here in this group. But yeah, Australia, I just don't think they have the talent right now. They've had some peaks and valleys throughout the years. We think about some great World Cup goals that Tim Cahill has scored, in past years. But I just think the squad is in a bit of a transitionary period where just don't see them getting out of that group. So sorry to be boring, but I'm going to pick the top two again, France and Denmark.
Huh? Hey, that's all good.
Quite all right. So Group E
got to be the group of death, right? This is
is there a group of death?
If
this
there
year?
Is one, right? Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. Group B with England and the U.S. and Wales and Iran probably, I think, has the highest world ranking teams, but I don't know. Spain, Germany, Japan. It's hard to find a stronger group than that. So
right,
and unfortunate Costa Rica gets placed in there as well. So Spain is the favorite. Germany is just right behind them, plus 110. Japan 12-1. Costa Rica 50-1 to win that group. Any chance either Japan or Costa Rica knocks off the top two there?
Well, I think Japan's a good team. Germany is kind of, I don't know if they've really found their feet in this current iteration of the squad. They haven't, in the last couple major tournaments, they haven't really found a lot of success. So, I mean, maybe they could be had. I think Spain is a bit of a, maybe not a dark horse because people probably expect them to, but I think they could be a good bet to win it all. I think they're pretty underrated at every position. But Germany, I think they could be had. Japan's a good team. And one thing that can always be a game changer during a major tournament like this is an elite goalkeeper. And Keylor Navas has been doing it for a decade for Costa Rica.
Yeah.
He there's the cliche winning, you know, your team points on your own, but he literally could do that. And like I said before, when you play one game against each of the other group stage teams, I don't know, it could happen. But I'll go Spain, Japan out of Group E. I'm going to throw a bit of a curveball. Yeah. Oof.
I like it.
Okay.
Tim, do you still have some affinity for Germany?
Oh yeah, I got my Germany jersey lined up and ready to go. So I hope that doesn't happen. So here's my question. So like Japan's odds are +1200. If you take them out, like let's say we could drop them in a random other group, are they going to be more like, would you think they'd be more in like the +500-600 range? Like, are they that low of odds because they're in with Spain and Germany, you think?
Yeah, I think that definitely has to be it. It's, I mean, Spain and Germany, they're both probably top five teams in the world. Japan, I think, is probably in that tier with like the US. The fact they just beat the US in a friendly a couple months ago. And it was like it was one of those prep for the World Cup friendlies. We're playing our A team. It's not one of these, let's see if this guy who used to play basketball knows how to play soccer now or something. It's like your actual starting lineups. And Japan pretty much dominated the U.S. So I think they're kind of in that tier. If you put them in another group, I think absolutely they you'd like their chances a lot more.
Yeah, so there's some interesting value with that team for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. So if they, they're a long shot to get out of the group, but if they do, then maybe, there might be as good of a spot as USA or Wales or something like that. All right, so under Group F, Belgium is the favorite, -200. Croatia is the next in that one at +250. Then Morocco and Canada as well in that one.
Yeah, so this group is, I mean, they've got Belgium as the favorite there, but honestly, this might be a bit of a hot take, but I don't think there is that much separating any of these four teams.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Mm. So Belgium, they've been overrated for since Eden Hazard was 16, basically. And they're another of these teams that just feels like one of those, one more roll of the dice with the same guys. And I just think they're a little past it, and they're not as deep as maybe they've been in years past. So I think they can be had. And Croatia, I'm going to put them as favorites in this group. I think they're always underrated. They always go deep. I think last World Cup, did they make the final, I believe? Is that right? And Modric was the player of the tournament. I know they're just always good. I think if you go back to like the dissolution of Yugoslavia and look at all the major tournaments since then, I think Croatia has made the quarterfinals or semifinals in like an insane percentage for, compared to their population and things like that. They're just, they're always a good team. They always put a good team out there. They know what their jobs are. They do them. And then, Morocco and Canada, they're kind of in similar to maybe like a U.S. team where they've got a good solid core, but then some really elite kind of individual talents. Could make all the difference in a group. So I think if you were looking for like value, I wouldn't be against throwing a couple bucks at Morocco or Canada to win this group. So
is Morocco is another France South.
Yeah, they are. They are. They're another, well, right? They're another big, big French C team, I guess you could say.
Right. And Canada was the class of CONCACAF, the North American.
Yeah.
But are they have some injuries? Is that what I'm remembering?
I believe so. They, I know Alfonso Davies is hurt, I think. And that is a major, I mean, he's definitely their pinnacle, you know, gold standard, their best player right now. And I think he's hurt enough that he's not even around the squad at all. But, oh, no, I'm seeing here he is in the squad. So that's good news for them. Looks like they've got him. They've got Jonathan David, who's a huge talent playing for Lille. And I don't know. I think they could, you know, some of the defense, some of the midfield, it's a little sketchy, but, you know, most World Cup teams outside of the top four or five all have those kind of weak points. So, I could see them doing something.
Yeah. I mean, if that group is very interesting, if Belgium is, you know, takes a step back, sure, or, you know, loses their first game, that one is pretty much wide open.
Yeah, I guess I'll do for my hot take picks in this one. I'm going to go Croatia one. I'm going to pick Canada number two in the group, going to the knockouts.
Okay. All right. I like it. All right. So on to Group G with Brazil, -250 there, the tournament favorites as well, with Switzerland, Serbia, and Cameroon. Cameroon is 12-1.
Keep in mind that Cameroon is who I always played with in FIFA on the Sega Genesis. That's
okay. Well, if you put it like that, I'm picking them number one. No. Unfortunately, I don't think they quite have the talent to get out of this group. Switzerland and Serbia are always solid. They've got players playing in some great teams. Brazil, of course, one of the best out there. They might be ranked number one right now. I'm not sure. But, you know, they're another of those countries like France where you could probably get a pretty good squad out of the players they left at home. So I'm picking them number one. Between Switzerland and Serbia, honestly, they're pretty even to me. I think it could go either way. It's kind of a tasty little matchup if you're into, you know, geopolitics, because, you know, half the Swiss team is for some reason Kosovoan refugees. So there's always
interesting.
Yeah, there's always some bad blood between these two teams for whatever reason. Like Granit Xhaka, who plays for Arsenal, is of Kosovoan, I guess, origin. So I don't know. Sometimes things get a little ugly between those two teams. So be looking at that match for some potential fireworks. Usually the players keep it professional, but sometimes the fans don't always.
Yeah.
All right. So who you got besides Brazil coming out of that group? Because I want to put one on that one.
All right. I'll go Switzerland. I think they're just a little bit better. You know, it's close, though. Okay. Yeah.
All right, cool. All right, so last group, we got Portugal -150, then Uruguay +200, Ghana and South Korea 11-1 to win Group H.
This is an interesting one, too.
Yeah, so Portugal, I think they're very good. They're very deep. They've got players on their bench that other teams would be their best player. Thinking about like Renato Sanchez, but sometimes there's a little bit of a problem with them where they've got some big personalities who maybe aren't all the way there anymore as players, and Cristiano Ronaldo especially, and maybe to a lesser extent Pepe. And it's kind of, you know, is the coach going to stick with these seasoned veterans, we'll call them, or is he going to try to, you know, lean on that that fresh talent that they're so deep at. Either way, I think they're good enough to win this group. It's not the strongest group. So I'm still going to pick them coming out at number one. Between Uruguay and Ghana, you know, Uruguay, they've got a lot of attacking talent. They've got some pretty solid midfield players, but, you know, they're still running the same, you know, Atletico Madrid defenders out there every match. I could see Ghana getting second in this group. And, you know, maybe even better, because they've got a lot of young talent, guys that are playing like in the Premier League, leagues like that every week against some of the best, you know, competition in the world. So I think I would look to them to make it out of this group. Actually, I think I'm going to go Portugal, Ghana, and South Korea. I think they're in a little bit of a lull, and I think Son from Tottenham is probably not going to be able to be much of a factor, I think, with some injuries that he's been dealing with, but we'll see. He could be a game-changing talent. He's just, I don't know if it's going to work out for him this year.
All right. Well, I like Uruguay. I have them to go to the quarterfinals as well. So I'm going head to head with you there.
That's fair. I mean, they're good. It's a close one. I just, you know, I'm trying to keep things fresh here. And
no, that's fine. I'm not criticizing you. I just, Uruguay and Senegal are the two teams that I kind of thought about to get past the round of 16. Mm-hmm. All right. So we'll let you get out of here, but we got to get a winner out of you. Brazil, France, Argentina, England, Spain in that order are the top five, at least, you know, from points bet on the odds to win it all. Mm-hmm. Who you got?
I am going to go with Spain this year. I think just feels like France are kind of due for one of their like personality based implosions that they have from time to time in major tournaments. I don't know. Things have been going too good there for too long. So feels like it's time for, you know, there to be some sort of huge scandal that fractures the dressing room.
Okay.
I think, you know, between them, I think England, I just don't think that they utilize their talent enough to make it deep to, I know they made it to the final of the Euros last year, but I just don't see it this year. Argentina, I think, is a little weak in some pretty critical positions, and Germany, like I said, I just don't see it. So I'm going Spain.
Okay. We'll definitely hold you to that. And, you know, if Spain doesn't win, then we will make sure that we call that out.
If they get knocked out in the group, then you feel free to hire a new chief soccer correspondent.
We'll dock your pay as our soccer correspondent.
That's only fair, I think.
Yeah. All right, Ben. Tim, any other last quick hits for Ben before we let him get out of here?
Nope. All good. Thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right, Tim, I'm all up to date on the World Cup. I have everything I need.
Who do you got? Who's your...
Oh, that's a great question. I hadn't even really thought about that. I like the... Gosh. Ah, boy. I'm going to have Brazil take it. I don't know. That's chalk, but I think they had the best team and... And I do like the Spain look, and I don't want to copy up Ben.
Right. So, yeah.
That's what I'll go with.
I mean, hey, chalk is chalk. That's no harm in that. I will go with. I really liked his Ghana hot take. That they're kind of a sleeper team that's out there, but
I'm going to go with Germany. It's been a while since they've won the World Cup, and I'll be a real homer and pick that, you know, the team I'm rooting for. Oh, outside the U.S. So
right, I think there's a famous quote of something about, you know, soccer as you run around for 90 minutes and in the end Germany wins.
Yeah,
so maybe that one will end up true. Anything other than the World Cup you keeping your eye on?
No, so that's I'm planning I'm trying to plan my trip home for Thanksgiving in a way that allows me to watch the U.S. game. I think it's on Wednesday morning at 8 o'clock. So the games are going to be on.
Yeah,
that's a good. Like, what will the earliest slate of games be? Will it be 8 or will it be earlier than that?
So there are some at 5 a.m.
Okay.
Eastern. The U.S. does not have a 5 a.m. They have Monday at 2 p.m., then Friday at 2 p.m., Friday the 25th. On the Black Friday at 2 p.m.
Okay.
So that one is a good time. And the other one is actually a Tuesday at 2 p.m. as well. So are they all at 2 p.m.? Yeah, they are all at 2 p.m. So far. So those are pretty good times for, you know, a World Cup across the world. I think they are still playing late at night because it is still a bazillion degrees there. So it's not like they're playing day games very much.
I just looked it up and it looked like it was a nice crisp 90 degrees in Qatar right now. So,
okay. Yeah. At it's probably in the morning. So yeah.
Yeah. Right. Nice. It's probably it's whatever, like 9 a.m.
Yeah. Yeah. Just getting real nice and warm.
Yeah.
All right. So, Let's go ahead and get out of here. So keep your eyes glued to the World Cup and keep your ears glued to Dynasty Sports Empire, the podcast. And we'll talk to you next week.
You got it. Yeah. It is weird. Like I usually get to watch a lot of these games because it's in the summer and I'll just pop them on. And now it's such an odd feeling to have it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing I was getting to is like, it's just, I'm not quite up for it. There's college basketball, there's college football, NFL, like everything's going on. And it's like, oh yeah, here's this major tournament that only happens once every
year. Yeah. You're really going to get some sports overload because it's coming right in the middle of like, you know, rivalry week.